If you don't stay down and you never quit, come on over here and sit on the far end of the bench.
Ladies and gentlemen, bench warmers, this is one of those times where if you've been putting in the effort to stick with the show for a while, if you've been paying attention to things, this is one of those payoff kind of moments. Special bonus episode, we get an interview, going back to our interview series, but this time it's with not somebody in sports, it's with the guy that you've been hearing for the last, I want to say, year and a half, almost 2 years. Honestly, I can't remember how long it's been since you sent over that lick, but Warren Garrett, the voice behind our intro music, our theme, if you will, he's joining us today, going to talk a little bit about his journey in his music. We're going to be lucky enough. He said he's going to play. I'm a nerd, so I asked him to play a song acoustically. And then at the end of the show, everybody's going to want to stick around. If you haven't heard his songs before, or if you're tuning in because you're a fan of his music, we're putting in his new single, Let Me Go, which is out now on all platforms. Be sure to go check that one out. Follow him on Spotify. Follow him on Apple Music. Follow him on all social media at Warren Garrett Music. And you can check out his website, warrengarrettmusic.com. Warren, we've been trying. I've been wanting to do this for a while. I'm sure it was a little bit different on your end. The backstory, I've kind of touched on it before, but I was drunk listening to you play country music at a bar in Vegas. Yep. You ended with my hero, my all-time favorite. It was Friends in Low Places, which is, that was a pandering pick. I'm not going to lie, but I appreciated it. I came up, I said it was a great show. I loved that performance. And I connected on social media the next day and started hounding you for a song. But this has kind of been my goal the whole time. I don't know if you felt the same way. I thought maybe you thought I was just some random drunk weirdo at Vegas that you're like, God, I've been here for 6 days. It's time for me to get out of Nevada. I need to get back home to real civilization. But thank you for coming on. This is an Dude, honor.
No, thank you for having me, man. No, that was a fun show. Every time in Vegas is fun. And believe it or not, man, I've made some cool friends and got to do some cool stuff just from random, you know, conversations in Vegas after the show. So this is awesome. I'm happy to be here. And I mean, I know we've been trying to kind of connect on this for a minute. I'm glad we finally did. Finally found a day.
You're busy. You're trying to make your way. We were talking a little bit before we turned the camera on, and it is similar, a grind that we both have to be on, basically always thinking about creating something. How am I going to put that out to the world? How is that going to be received? So there's a lot of cool conversations that we're able to have. And we seem to, you know, we're of similar cut cloth, we're both hard workers, and you're doing your thing independently right now. We're on Variety Sports Network, which big shout out to them, because this will be available through their channel as well. We turn the video over, but you know, we have that network. We're basically still independent, trying to build everything from the ground up. So when you can find like-minded people, it's kind of reassuring that you're on the right track, but also like things work out because you're obviously doing very well and you're putting in a lot of good work. The song that we're going to hear at the end of the episode, I really enjoy. It hits right in the middle of what I'm definitely into right now. And I'm definitely going to, it's a good one. You know, on the relationship front, it's been difficult for the past couple weeks since you guys are hearing this a little bit later. Country music is there for me, so
yeah,
I'm happy about that.
Music's always there for you, bro.
That's always the best thing. But let's get into what your story is. You said you're from South Carolina, Clemson country. How did you get? Were you always musically inclined? Is this going to be like an episode of The Voice where you've been like playing guitar since you were three and and sang lead in your church choir? Or how'd you get involved with it?
No, dude. I started playing with my dad. My dad plays, and it's always kind of been like a hobby and a passion that he had. And so when I was like eight, so not three, not quite three. So I don't get the sympathy on that one. I was eight, and my dad was like, hey man, you want to play something? You know, or he wanted me to play something. And the only thing I could pick up, I mean, I was eight, was a mandolin. And so I started playing mandolin with my dad because he loved bluegrass and stuff like that. Yeah. So I started playing with him. And dude, there used to be, so growing up, like I said, I mean, I grew up right next to Clemson but I grew up in a little town called Seneca. So my hometown's where you go get a hotel if you want to hang out in Clemson.
So it's busy. It's busy during the fall.
Well, yeah. But that's about it. So there's not a lot to do. There's not a lot going on. But I mean, it's a beautiful place. It's beautiful lakes and all that. But there's not a lot of, you know, stuff to do. And some of the old school guys, the old school musicians in the area, they get together and have these like bluegrass jams. And my dad would take me around when I was like 10 or 11 years old and watch these guys play, man. And watching somebody just, you know, just do it one, just because they love to do it. But, you know, I was a little kid and I got to watch all these old dudes that could just absolutely destroy on whatever they were playing. And it just, I fell in love with it, man. And I fell in love with playing and creating. And it was also the way that I started to kind of interface with the world, you know, it was like writing songs or music, you know, it was like my expression, you know.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like blending creative energies together. Like you're able to use what they're able to do. And if you're not familiar with bluegrass, it's kind of like the jazz of the country world, because it does have, it relies heavily on like the talent of the musician. It's not necessarily the words mean something, but like it's the fiddle, it's the fast playing, it's the up tempo, who can outdo who. I'm going to play this riff faster than you can. You're going to have to keep up. And then it's my turn to switch and you're going to have to, you know, follow me. It's an interesting, makes sense why it's a cool environment to grow up in. South Carolina, the South in general just has that kind of like aura or mystique about it. Like if you're living down there, especially if you're in a small town, basically expect people to pull up with a guitar on their back and, you know, can I play you a song? And it's going to turn out to be a hit and they're going to be on the radio. But that environment definitely probably, I could see how that kind of shaped you creatively. And that process is probably something, is that something you still follow? Now you're making music out in Nashville. Is that the jam process? Is that how you still create your songs and create your music?
It's come from, I feel like, a thousand different places for me. I mean, that's really how it started and kind of how I fell in love with it, you know. And it's like, and it's something I did with my dad to, you know, connect with him and something we did together, a hobby. And we started writing songs together when I was really young. And like I said, I kind of fell in love with that as a way to process everything that was going on around me, process everything in my life with songwriting. And so I kind of, you asked about the process. I've done it a lot of different ways. Like it depends on, for me, what inspires, like the brand new song that I just put out. That song started from kind of that jam thing. I was just sitting around with a guitar and a couple of my buddies and came up with a cool lick, you know, and I was like, oh, that's dope. I love that. I love how that feels. I love how that sounds. And my buddy started throwing lyric in and I started throwing lyric in, you know, and then my producer started building track, and it's like, it all came together organically like that, which was cool. But I've started with, you know, thoughts and lyrics and stuff like that before. You know, so I know there are people and they're great and they have a process that they stick to every time. And I respect that. But I feel like I've gotten really cool things from different areas of creativity, you know, whether it starts with a guitar, whether it starts with a lyric, or whether you just come home and you're bummed out and you're like, I want to write about this, or you're really excited, you know, you're really stoked, or you know, you got drunk last night, you want to write about that. So it's like it comes from everywhere, man, which I think is cool.
Yeah. It makes sense to not stifle where you can, because if you keep yourself open to where it can come from and not have just like a singular process, you're probably able to be more successful and able to network a little bit. And I'm sure that's part of the songwriting process, like being able to find Hardy comes to mind, because he wrote on so many great songs before he actually became famous himself. I was lucky enough to see him as he was opening for Morgan Wallen with one of my ex-girlfriends. She was a big Wallen fan and bought tickets. He was the opener. I was like, that's something that's a guy that's including all of these different inspirations. And he's making like what it sounds like his own, but it's also country music. And it speaks to that same thing. It's difficult for creative people, for non-creative people, to see something like that and be like, it comes from, they're able to just open themselves up and experience those things. Before we get into more of what you're doing now, as you were a kid and as you started to develop this love for music, what else were you doing? Was it all music based, or were you hanging out? Were you on in clubs, sports? What was your life outside of the music process like, or was it always just going to be this journey of getting to Nashville and at some point putting out your own stuff?
That's a good question. For me, I mean, I grew up like, you know, I tell the joke all the time. It's like I was born in a single wide, graduated to a double wide. But when we lived there, like it was on a bunch of my granddad's land. And so I spent a lot of time outside, man. I spent a lot of time out. My dad always grew a garden every year. So I was always helping him with that. And, you know, working outside. And we had chickens and all kinds of stuff growing, you know, chickens and goats and, you know, raised hogs and stuff like that. And so I spent a lot of time doing that. So I was always like on a four wheeler or something like that, you know, riding or, you know, outside riding four wheelers and shooting guns with my dad and stuff like that, you know, just kind of living out in the country, man. But as far as the music thing goes, I always knew that that's what I wanted to do. You know, when I found it, I don't know that if that young you go, well, this is what I want to do forever for a career to make money. You know, I just knew that I wanted to make music forever. I wanted to create forever. And, you know, and that it was something I needed to kind of keep the crazy in check, you know, to be able to express things and, you know, work through things in my own soul, you know, and it's what it helped me do. But my mom, I always remember you talking about that I always want to move to Nashville. I remember when I told my mom, the day I told my mom, I was like, hey, I'm going to move to Nashville. And it was pretty quick because I had a couple guys that I barely knew. I didn't know them very well at all. And they go, hey, and they were from the same hometown. They were like, hey, man, we're moving to Nashville. I was like, when are you moving? They were like, about a week and a half from now. I was like, they go, we need another roommate. Do you want to go? Like, absolutely. And so it was quick, dude.
Any hesitation? Was there any like doubt or was it full? Just did you just jump off with the bungee cord attached? Because
I don't even know if I got a bungee cord, man. Yeah, well, I think I just jumped off.
That could be. Sometimes that's where the best things, like you have to learn to fly. You have to force yourself to be put in those situations. That's awesome. Was that the first, was that part of your band or were those just guys that you moved out here with?
No, just guys that I moved out there with. I mean, neither of them are here in Nashville anymore. But
I was going to say, it sounds like you're going to be the one to make it because you had almost no other option. And
yeah.
And it's a scary thing to do, but that seems like it's part of the necessary steps of that journey. If you don't take that risk, if you don't just say yes or say, oh, I'll be able to, I'm going to talk to my parents. We'll figure out a date that I'm going to move X amount of months. And you can always push that back. If you just jump right into it, you basically either sink or swim, not saying that you're going to fail and be totally out down on your luck, but at least you know that it gives you a clearer answer. If you always wait for it, or if you tried to plan it out, it probably doesn't go as the same direction. And I probably don't run into you in Vegas if you don't just jump in and say that. So that's an awesome part of your story. I didn't know about that before.
Yeah, man. I mean, I agree with you in the sense of if there's something that you want to do or something that's eating your soul up, man, you know, you have to go do it. Mm-hmm. That win, lose, or draw, you know, however it ends up, however it works out, you have to give it a shot. You have to go do it. You have to try. And, you know, it takes a little bit of stupid and a little bit of stubborn and a whole lot of stubborn, I would say, because that was, you know, that was my thing. It was like, I don't want to later on in my life, I don't want to turn 50 years old and go, well, what if I'd moved to Nashville? You know, it's like, I wanted to have an answer to that question, no matter how it played out, no matter how it plays out in the future. You know, it's like, I wanted to have an answer to that question, and I wouldn't have been able to forgive myself if I didn't know, you know, because I'd always dreamed about it. You always hear about, you know, it's like, oh, the Capitol music, you know, country music and all that. And, you know, you want to see it.
It's something different. It's got its own. The South has an aura. Nashville has its own. I just out there briefly, just after my senior year of high school, I went to the Country Music Hall of Fame and got the old Opry tour and got to see, funny enough, Chris Jansen was there, and that was right around the time
Miami
got huge on the radio, but it wasn't like he wasn't massive the way that he is now. But I got to see Chris Jansen perform by me a boat on the Grand Ole Opry stage. Just lucky, like, whoa, that was not expected, but it's an incredible place. You can't get into any of the local bars. I know that you're probably aware of that. We wanted to go to all the places. We're going to hear the best music in the world. It's capital of country music. except I can't get into any bars that anybody good is playing in. No offense. I just don't know of any other place. Like, this is the spot. This is what I was told. If you did not make that decision to just jump in and go to Nashville, was there a backup plan? Was there another option that you had, or was that not even a thought that you allowed yourself to have? Did you just go full in without any backup? I guess we can go back. What did your mom say when you told her you were moving in a week?
Oh, right. Yeah. Sorry. I didn't finish that thought. my mom goes, I always knew you were going to move to Nashville. She was like, I always knew you were going to go. And, you know, she's like, you know, basically gave me a hug. Was like, I love you. Good luck. But yeah, she wasn't surprised at all. And so that, you know, for me, that was kind of, yeah, it was cool. Well, it was cool in the sense it was like, that it felt like something that I was supposed to do. You know, it felt like something that I was always kind of drawn toward wanting to do. But no, I mean, as far as the backup plans go, I mean, I had jobs, you know, growing up. And so I knew I could work, you know, I worked on a couple different crews, like just trade crews and stuff like that. I worked probably when I was 14 to 17 on a logging crew. You know,
what was the, because it would be just comparative, because thinking about it with comparing where I'm from, I'm from the metro, like Denver, basically. I live like 20 minutes away from Grizzly Rose. That,
dude, I've played there.
I will want to go. I would like to see you play there again. I'm hoping that at some point you get back there, but it's a cool venue. To. But like, that was our culture is like, everybody's going to college because especially in the area that I live in, everybody's daddy has a company and they need to have a degree to get in and work at the nepotistic job that they're getting. Those are the kind of people that I grew up around. It sounds like you grew up around the total opposite. Like, people that went to college were seen as like nerds. Like, oh, what?
Well, no, what? I mean, like,
go outside and work.
Right. Well, that's what my dad did. I mean, my dad was he worked in an open face granite mine, you know, quarry mine, quarry mine. He worked in a rock quarry for long, you know, for my whole life, pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know, he worked outside and he worked on, as a equipment operator. And so, I mean, dude, by the time I was 12, I could drive a skid steer, backhoe, you know, tractors and stuff like that.
That's the education people don't know they need.
Yeah, well, and so that's just kind of how I grew up, and I grew up around a lot of blue collar people and a lot of blue collar guys. You know, my granddad was an electrician, and you know, he worked for Bell South when Bell South existed. You know, and so it's like, that's just kind of how I grew up. I mean, you know, I had cousins that went to college and went to Clemson and, you know, and all that. And so, but just what I was surrounded with was blue collar. And then, you know, when I stopped doing those jobs, I worked in a guitar shop for years, until I moved to Nashville, actually. So yeah, I mean, the backup plan, man, I don't know if I had a backup plan. I do know that I remember the decision, because I moved when I was like 21, I think. Yeah, dude.
Wow.
Yeah, I moved and slept on a Days Inn floor. Like, I didn't even have a bed at the Days Inn. Like, the other two guys had the money for a bed at the Days Inn, and I had like $30. So I gave him $30. Was like, let me sleep on the floor. And then I found a job on Craigslist the next day.
Craigslist. Ye old Craigslist.
The old Craigslist job. Yeah, dude. I started bouncing for Coyote Ugly.
No way.
Yeah. And that's
that's pretty cool. Yep.
Yeah.
That needed to be a part of the story. What was your bouncing technique? Did you watch Roadhouse and try and get yourself like, I want you to be nice until it's time to not be nice? Go intimidation over the top.
You basically watch every Guy Ritchie movie in existence and then try to find a balance between that.
Yeah.
But I bounced for Coyote Ugly and then I started bouncing for Tootsies. And then I actually got my first gig in Nashville at Tootsies, because the guy that books the music or booked used to there, he was standing in a doorway and I just stopped and asked him. I was like, hey man, I was like, how do you get to play? And there was a band on stage. And I was like, how do you get to do that? How do you get to play there? And he goes, do you sing? And I was like, I mean, I try to. And he goes, we'll get up there. And I was like, well, there's a band up there. And he stopped the band that was on stage at Tootsie's and said, all right, go up there and play me three songs. So I was like, okay. So I went up and played three songs. And then he goes, cool, play me, you know, a couple more. I played him a couple more. And he was like, all right, cool, you start next week. And so,
you know what song, do you have an idea what songs you chose?
I remember that I played Old Red because I was obsessed with that leg.
That's a good one.
I couldn't tell you the others. It's probably Old Red and a couple Garth Brooks songs because it's probably about all I knew at the time.
Look, you can't go wrong with the Oklahoma Boys. Blake Shelton and Garth Brooks are two good ones to pull from. And to be honest, if the guy's trying to see if you can play gigs in Nashville, if you're doing like the suggestion ones, you're going to get a Blake Shelton and a Garth Brooks song pretty much like every other. Either that or the most obscure thing. And you're like, what? Are you sure that's a song? Are you sure? Did you just make that up?
Yeah, is that real? Or what cracks me up is it's like they'll either do that or they'll tell you the song title and a different artist. Like I've been asked for Friends in Low Places by Tim McGraw before, you know. It's like, wait a minute.
How would you do that?
You mix that up. But yeah, you talk about Garth, man. I mean, even when we met, I was still, you know, still playing Garth songs, Friends in Places. So that probably helped out a little bit.
Yeah. That's where, so country music is, my parents like to joke, I've seen Garth Brooks in concert. I've seen him technically three times. I've seen him with my family at Pepsi Center Ball Arena in Denver. I saw him in 97 when my mom was pregnant with me, and my dad and my mom went to see him when he came to Colorado. I think it was when he was recording the Double Live album. So I'm definitely going to claim that one for sure.
Claim that you're on the record.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm sure I was kicking. He's those songs that I was doing the boot scootin' boogie to those songs.
Yeah. Kicking to the beat, man. Hey, that counts. You were on the record.
There you go. And I saw him most recently when he did that second comeback tour, and he was at Empower Field. I was at the very top of the Broncos Stadium, which ended up being kind of cool because in the upper halo, they gave you the glow bands that they started doing. Yeah. They would light up different colors for different songs that he was playing. Luckily enough, I've been lucky enough to see I got to see him. And in Ball Arena, when he does Thunder Rolls, they put out all the lights. They're able to flash the lightning across the arena ceiling. Yeah. It was raining when he played Thunder Rolls at Empower Field.
No way.
As big of a country music nerd as I was, that was one of the coolest. Didn't even matter who I was with, how I got the tickets. I would have been, could have jumped off the back of my seat and I would have been completely content by the time I hit the concrete. Because I'd still have like 45 more seconds of listening to the song. Just blah.
Yeah. It's just fine. It's like, nope, if I fall, I'm dying happy. That's good with
this
that.
This is how I want to go. This is how I've always pictured it. That we're rushing the stage. And then his security guard.
In the middle of Thunder Rolls.
Only the live version, because it's the last verse of the live version that really gets me. And I'm one of those people that definitely knows about the hidden verses. If I was playing country music, I would do the faux pas and play the – I don't know if you ever did that. Do you play the hidden verses when you do his songs?
Okay. Yeah, all the time.
I didn't know if there was, like, a rule against only Garth – like, only the king can wear the king's robes. I didn't know if anybody could just dust that off. So I want to hear about your wildest story as your time as a bouncer. Do you have something that was up insane?
Man, nothing comes to mind. It's mainly just the, like – for me, when I was bouncing at both of those places, I would start one shift. So I was a door guy at Tootsie's for a little while before I started bouncing. So I would start as a door guy at like 10 or 11 in the morning. And then I would work till 6. And then I'd have like an hour between my shift at Tootsie's and my shift at Coyote Ugly. So I'd get like, there's this dope little burger place on 2nd. It's not there anymore, but it was called Piranha's. It was on 2nd Ave, and they had the best burger in town, hands down. I'll fight anybody. I don't care. It was the best one. But so I get something to eat and then go work like another 8 hours at Coyote Ugly until like 3 or 4 in the morning when we all got out. But nah, I mean, nothing comes to mind. Just mainly dealing with, you know, drunk people coming through and trying to start fight. I mean, there's always, and I'm not the tallest dude in the room ever. And so I will tell you that everybody picks the shortest bouncer first. Everybody.
Because you look at the guy that looks like you either pick, unfortunately, the short guy probably is the musician. The tall guy might be the drummer, or possibly an MMA guy that just really enjoys country music. He just needs an extra outlet. I'm sure that there's, I'm trying to think. I know Michael Chandler fights out of Tennessee. Imagine having Michael Chandler. That would be another guy. He's the shortest guy in the room, but it'd be interesting to see that kind of thing. Bouncing at those places, college bars are, that's the only thing that comes to mind. Where were those two located on Broadway? Were they on Broadway or were they a little bit off of the main strip?
Well, Coyote was on, I don't even know if it's still there, but it was on Second Ave, and then Tootsie's is on Broadway. Tootsie's is that, and you said you got to come here once. There's a big purple building on Broadway, and that's Tootsie's.
Okay. I definitely remember Tootsie's then. I remember seeing it. Were there different places on the strip that you heard of that were more of like the seedier? Like I feel like there's a little bit more to uncover when you're trying to make it in Nashville. I'm picturing the crazy town with Jason Aldean, like having to figure out different ways to survive. It seems like, you know, kind of sounds like the jungle, but like what do you think was the hardest thing that you had to overcome while doing that stuff before you actually started playing music and you got your first few gigs and started actually making money, making music?
Oh man, that's a great question. The hardest thing that I had to overcome, I think just sticking around, man. I think the most difficult, and I know that, you know, that's not like for me, it's always the simple things that are the hardest, you know, mm-hmm. staying consistent with the simple things. And so it was finding a place to live, you know, making sure that I was making enough bills to at least keep my room long enough to get gigs, and then, you know, get, and then when you do that, you try to get enough gigs and learn the whole process. You know, you learn how to entertain. You're talking about Garth, man. I mean, he was somebody that I grew up idolizing as far as an entertainer goes. I mean, his music too. I got to see him once in Charleston when he was doing that, the last tour he did.
Yep.
I got to see him in Charleston. But he was somebody that I looked up to. I would watch his videos, man. I had that DVD collection that was like 10 or 12 DVDs. And not to like date myself there.
DVD. You're hitting home right now. I remember those videos, and he's such an entertainer, and I feel the same way, like a guy, like a Freddie Mercury. You could watch them doing a audio performance. Like they're singing songs. You could watch that on a television muted and be totally enthralled in what's going on because of what they're just able to do. And they can hold everybody's attention. Garth had a series. It was on GAC when he was doing his little one-man show at the Wynn. And I'm so disappointed that he's not doing that anymore, because I'd love to go and hear about his music. That was what it was, talking about his musical. But he's able to just hold everybody there. And I'm sitting on the edge of my couch at home as he's playing different licks of songs, Midnight Train to Georgia. I was like, that, it gave me chills. And it's something like I said, you could watch them on mute and be totally entertained and totally enthralled.
He was 10 years running, I think, Entertainer of the Year. I think he and Kenny Chesney are the only people that have done that. And I've seen both of those shows and they both deserve it.
Well, I mean, but then you get all the haters saying that he can't really sing. He's just doing all the acrobatics and all the flips.
Man, there's always going to be people talking crap. You know, there's always, no matter what you do, if you're killing it, there's going to be people talking crap. If you're not killing it, there's going to be people talking crap. And that's just, you know, that just comes with the territory. So, cause I was watching those same videos, man, like the live videos. And I was trying to figure out, what is he doing that's holding all those people? You know, you watch interviews and, you know, you always heard Garth talk about playing to the person in the back of the room. You know, he was like, he's playing to the people in the very back. He wants them to be able to feel it. He wants them to be able to connect. And that's who he's going after. And so it's like something trying to grab stuff like that when you get your first couple gigs in Nashville to go, all right, what can I do to, you know, what can I do to stand out? What can I do, you know, to make a little bit of a name, to go, all right, you know, I'm here to play. I'm here to do the thing. And I got to learn from a lot of really cool people. When I got actually, when I told you that story about getting up and playing a few songs. So right after that, the guy that booked for Tootsie's, he sent me down to Panama City. He was like, hey man, you're going to go down there and you're going to meet a guy named Archie. And Archie used to play for Hank Jr. And Archie's going to teach you how to work a crowd. I was like, okay, absolutely. I mean, cause like, dude, I mean,
Hank Jr. Shit.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. He played for Hank. Archie Van is his name. And it's a killer guitar player. But yeah, dude, I went down there, and so Archie Van was a guitar player, a guy named Thumper Tarver was the drummer, and I'll never forget that. I mean, they rode me hard, man, as far as like, hey, you're not doing this right, you're not doing that right, and this is bad, this is not, you know. And I remember I got so pissed off at the drummer, and I was like, whatever, dude, just get back up here and go back to work. And so I got up on stage and I was pissed. And I just like, you know, put it all into this on the stage and in the crowd. And we got done. And the drummer grabbed me by the shoulder. He went, that right there, that's what I need from you every night. And I was like, oh, cool. All right. You know, just like trying to pull the energy and the passion and like show you what you got to give to, you know, to make a difference, stand out, the whole crowd.
That's awesome. And that's cool of the guy that booked you initially. Obviously he knew that you didn't have a ton of experience, so that was part of what he wanted, but he couldn't, it's not like he's sending everybody down to work with these guys, so he obviously thought you were going to be able to stick around and you were somebody that was worth asking those guys to work with. And it sounds a lot like the coaching that I do, and just trying to find, you have to find different ways to motivate different people, and some people take them over off to the side and we can talk about what went wrong. Or some people you have to challenge them. Like, I told you that was a dumb idea, and that's not the good way to do that. Do it how I want you to do it. And like, no, shut up. I'm not you. I'm trying to be me. And I'm sure that's right. What it felt like. And he's just, you know, just poking the bear intentionally. He knew that's what you were going to do. He wasn't actually pissed off. And whether you hit him or whether you got up there and did the rest of the show, he's like, I'm going to get something. And that's what he was going for.
He did. And the drummer down there was, I was always grateful for him, to him for that, you know, is pushing me to go, all right, this is what you need. You know, this is what you need to go up on stage with. If you want to hold the people, if you want to, you know, if you want to make enough tips to eat tonight, this is how you got to work. And like you say, trying to find ways to motivate. Yeah. I'm sure there's similarities there, and you got to find different ways to motivate different people, you know, to be able to read them and read what they need. And I was grateful that I got sent down with a couple guys that could do that.
So we're kind of getting to a point, I figure maybe doing the acoustic, the playing first time might work a little bit better. We'll finish up with some kind of rapid fire questions. That's how we normally finish up all the interviews and everything like that. So put you on the spot towards the end. Was the first time the first single, that's the first one that comes up on Spotify. Was that the first one that you put out?
It's the first one that I put out that I was like, all right, this is the direction that I want to start going in and kind of trying to figure out what I sounded like and what I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. And I wrote first time by myself, and I was kind of pissed off at a girl one night and starting to think about, oh man, it just feels like every time you get your heart broke, it feels like the first time it ever happened. And I started thinking about that and sat down, basically just wrote a song about, you know, my first relationship ending, and how that every time that something like that happens, it reminds me of that moment, you know, because no matter how old you get, it always feels like you're 17 and you know, you got your heart crushed like a Coke can.
Very recently, I was like, I went right back to, you know, standing there 18 in a parking lot when, you know, that makes a lot of sense. That, like I said, that's part of what I wanted to know about the song. It sounds a lot.
Through it, man. It sucks.
Yeah. It sounds a lot like, It reminded me of Don't Think I Don't Think About It, that Darius Rucker song.
Yeah.
That it gave me a lot of those vibes. It sounded like that. And I know he's, you know, another South Carolina guy. So
yeah,
it makes sense that that would be part of the influence. Before, you know, I asked you to play and everything like that, who do you think you channel most? Who inspired your music the most? Who do you think you most sound like?
Oh man, I get compared to a lot of different guys all the time. The one that I appreciate the most, because I love how, you know, I love their production, I love their writing, and the way they do things. I love Brantley Gilbert's music.
Yes, I love that makes a lot of sense. Yep,
I love Eric Church's music.
That too.
You know, as far as like the newer guys that I think I would compare my, not, you know, newer as far as, you know, like still on the radio today. I grew up listening to Stevie Ray Vaughan and Hank Jr. and, you know, Marshall Tucker and all, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd and all kinds of stuff. My dad still to this day, you walk in my parents' house and there's just a wall of records, and like it's
cool.
Yeah, my dad loves music, and so I got to listen to everybody growing up, and so, which was, you know, as a musician, something I'm super grateful for. But yeah, I mean, as far as like the guys today, I feel like I'd probably say that, you know, I look up to, and I get compared to Brantley and Church.
Yeah, Brantley makes the, you know, he's into that you have a little bit of that biker image.
Yeah.
don't know if that's a true thing or not, but Brantley, he's been on a couple of shows that I've listened to, and he actually talked about, he does have bikers that he has, like, he can kind of call on payroll. He was a bit part of that life, almost a part of that life, a lot further into it than being a musician, but he has a few songs that you can always, you know, rely on and put you in a certain place. He's the guys that I really enjoy, and I do listen to the radio country music, like the stadium rock. It's easy to listen to. It follows the same formula, and I know, but the guys that I do enjoy listening to are like the Luke Combs, Morgan Wallens, the Hardys. Yeah. I like listening to your stuff, and the radio station that I found today on Spotify has a lot of guys that sound similar to that. Zach Bryan is another one that's huge right now, but just that older, you guys sound older in the way the music sounds, but you're talking about the stuff that we're all, that the new generation of guys are going through. So it's like outlaw country, but in a updated way.
Yeah.
Man. I almost think.
Dude, Hardy's great too. I love his songs, man. I get every time he puts something out, I get excited because I love, like, I have so much of the rock side, like, in the stuff that I do, and Hardy just full-on embraced, you know, full-on embraced.
I think he released a couple pop punk songs on that last country album that he put out there. Those were the Mockingbird and the Crow, that turns punk really easily. That was one that I really enjoyed.
He's obviously a great writer, and so I love his music too, man. You mentioned him a couple times.
It's difficult when I'm talking about creators and like that. He's a guy that I would look up to as just being able to. What's the best way to be successful in your industry and this industry that we're trying to grow in is being authentically yourself. That's also one of the hardest things to do, because you know, you put yourself out there and you're vulnerable. People might not like it, and that's upsetting. But you know, that's a skill I'm sure you had to learn being on stage. Not every night's going to be, you're not rocking Madison Square Garden every night. You're not playing the Grand Ole Opry every night. Sometimes it's just a shit gig, but you got to deal with the shit gigs. I said it on our show a couple weeks ago, like the bad shows or the bad times or the bad gigs that you have show you that there were good gigs that you were having. So maybe you got a little monotonous, but having that down episode kind of shows you, okay, now I recentered myself. I know where I was. It wasn't like I was just, I thought I was in this middle path. I was actually up here. I have to deal with this shit now, but going through that will push me back up to, you know, I can get back to those heights. I thought it was lower than what it actually was. I didn't realize how well you were doing with, you know, coming out of that negative thing. That's something that I've been thinking about over the last few days. And it sounds like, you know, I'm sure that musicians have to learn that the hard way too.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's something to be proud of too, man. Like if you go through that and you come out on the other side and you're still creating and you're trying to feel, you know, figure out how to be more authentic and more yourself, and you know, the artistic journey in that regard, man, it's 'cause like you said, it's scary and, you know, it's not easy to go to listen to your songs, or I'm sure, like, you know, listen to your podcast, or how you're, you know, teaching or coming off to people, you know, it's like to look in the mirror and go, okay, what can I do to be more of myself, to get, you know, to give more of myself to this, to put more of myself into that. And, you know, it's not easy. And I respect anybody that is willing to, you know, to go, this is who I am, this is how I want, you know, this is something I want to share with the world, something I created, you know, and has, you know, has the guts to do that, man. I think it's awesome. And, but like you said, I think it makes the high points even better, because if you never, you know, for me, it's like, if I never played the bar stools, which I did a lot, or empty bars, or even bars with people in them that, you know, would rather be flirting with a bartender than listening to the band, you know, it's like, every moment like that makes me appreciate when we get a room full of people that are just locked into what we're doing, and every word and every chord and every moment they're just right there with. Like, I'm so thankful for those moments, because I had to do the other. So I'm right there with you, man.
It makes a lot of sense. And it's, that's part of it. I recognize that when I saw you perform, like, I'm sure that you would have done that the same way if the bar was empty. It's a losers is different, because you're always going to have some, it's filled because it's in the middle of the MGM, like right as you go into the mall, edge of the casino floor, right into the mall. So you're either spending the money or gambling your money away, and you can meet at the bar in the middle. Losers is a little bit different, but that it was, you know, felt like you'd give off the same energy. And that's something that I gravitated towards. And you put your own sound on the songs that you were singing. You were singing covers that night, but it sounded like your songs. And
thank you, man.
I feel like now we can, if you don't mind, this would be a decent time showing our listeners. I want to hear the acoustic version of this song, because that's the one that I started listening to. Like I mentioned, you talked a little bit about the first song that you wrote and that process. So if you don't mind, I think the listeners and I would appreciate it.
I don't mind at all, brother. I appreciate you asking me to play it. And thank you again for having me on. Let me share music with you and, you know, anybody listening. But, I told a story earlier. This one's called First Time. Thought it'd be different now, but I'm a little older, maybe somehow I grown a little bolder, and turning that cold shoulder wouldn't feel so wrong. Every time my clock runs out, she says, baby, it's over. Snap right back to a parking lot in Georgia, and I'm 17 in a little green Nissan, breathing deep, trying to hold on to something I had already lost and thought I could save. Feels like the first time every time my heart breaks. It's always the same, I never see it coming. Same old pain freight train hits me and keeps running. One day I'll pull myself off of those tracks. Until then, I got a steady reminder of what they all chose to leave behind. And then I'm 17 in a little green Nissan, breathing deep, trying to hold on to something I had already lost and thought I could save. Feels like the first time, every time my heart breaks, yeah. And I'm 17 in a little green Nissan, breathing deep, trying to hold on to something I had already lost and thought I could save. And I'm 17 in a little green Nissan, breathing deep, trying to hold on to something I had already lost and thought I could save. But feels like the first time, every time my heart breaks. Lord, it feels like the first time, Every time my heart breaks.
That was, it's nice. The mixed version, it hides a little bit of that chord. Yeah. But I didn't realize how that chord was basically, that's the backbone of the entire melody of the song. That's awesome. Thank you for doing that. Sounded just like, you know, what I pictured. That was really cool. How long did it take to come up with the music for that one?
Honestly, that one, like I said, songs fall out in different ways, you know? And that one was just, I never intended to put that song out. It was just, for me, it was just, I was mad at a girl and I was feeling exactly that way. And so it's like, I wrote it for me, you know, in the sense of like, this is how I feel right now. And, you know, I just want to express that. I want to get that out. And I want to, you know, and so I got done with it. And I was like, man, I actually really love this song. And so I got to go into, you know, one of the few times I got to go in a big national studio and do that whole thing. And, you know, you go in and you cut a song in probably an hour. You know, you got some great players and they go through it and then you're done. You get what you get kind of thing, which, you know, there's good and bad to that. Nowadays I prefer, you know, taking a little more time, taking a couple of days and actually piecing everything together, you know, being able to have a little more creative freedom on it. But it was the first time that I'd gotten to go into like a, you know, big national studio and cut that song.
Yeah. It would be interesting to pick the brains of those guys playing in those studios, because they have to be able to just match whatever and basically, you know, similar to those guys that play the cover shows in Nashville. I want you to play Kenny Chesney. Not only do I want you to play this Kenny Chesney song, I want you to sound like Kenny Chesney on the radio when you do it. And if you don't, you're ruining my vacation. And if you ruin my vacation, I'm going to toss this drink at you. We're going to turn this scene into an actual Roadhouse scene. And Warren over at the bar is going to actually have to bounce somebody out of here.
Oh, dude, I've had to play bouncer at shows. Not ones in Nashville, but ones on the road. Yeah. I've had to go back to my old bouncing days for a minute. Every now and then somebody gets a little wild, but dude, the one that scares me the most isn't even like, hey, I need you, you know, I want you to do a good job on this song. It's when somebody comes up the stage and they go, hey, I really want you to play this song. It's our like 40th wedding anniversary and this is our wedding song. Those are the only ones really the requests that make me nervous. And I'm like, oh no, it's like, you have to get this one perfect, man. It's like, they've been together for decades and you know, that's incredible. That's awesome. And then they just ask us. That one gets to me.
That's a lot of pressure.
But the studio guys, man, are unreal. Like you give them a chart, you let them hear the song once, maybe twice. And then they've got a chart in front of them, and then they go in the studio and they record it. And I mean, they're phenomenally talented.
Being around a savant like that is something that it's just entertaining even to watch. I've seen the videos on the internet of I can't think of his name, the drummer for the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Chad
Smith.
I think so.
And he's able to listen to 30 Seconds to Mars for like 45 seconds, pick up the beat that it's in and basically play the drum riff that was in the song. He's not hearing it in his headphones. He can just hear what the other instruments are doing and he can just match it. That's somebody who's, you know, the 10,000 hours thing and that's a master of his craft. Those are the kind of people that are interesting, you know, being around them every now and then is like that. It's good to find role models and people like that you kind of stick out to. Before we get into the rapid fire questions, what is your plan? So I know that Let Me Go is out now, which we've been talking about. I don't know how long ago that you released it, but it's out and it's released. What's the plan for the upcoming future? You said you were working in the studio, not necessarily touring as much, but what are your kind of plans? Where are people going to be able to find the most about what you're doing as we're getting into the rapid fire and then wrapping things up?
Yeah, man. Honestly, like just the streaming services, if you follow me on like Spotify or iTunes or something like that, because we just dropped Let Me Go probably a week and a half ago, something like that. So it hadn't been out very long, but I've got music coming probably once a month this year. So at least we're going to drop a new song about once a month and, okay. you know, get to see what people think. And so that's part of the reason that I'm not touring as much, so I can really, you know, really focus on writing songs and, you know, developing those in the studio and getting them out to people, man.
Is the overall goal to be picked up by a label, or is it to stay independent as long as possible? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I've definitely thought about it. Honestly, you know, I'm open to anything. You know, I'm not just going to jump on anything that comes across, you know, it comes along. But, you know, if it's the right, you know, right relationship, right, you know, right thing, then absolutely, you know, but I'm definitely trying to build something independent, you know, and build a sound and build something that, you know, hopefully people really love and connect to, and, you know, they really, really can see themselves in, because I see myself in it, you know.
Yeah, it's working. So I don't think that there's anything that needs to be, I mean, just people need to keep listening. So Benchwarmers have their homework assignment. Listen to Warren Garrett. Tell people to listen to Warren Garrett.
Let's go.
Tag him as many times as possible that you listen to this show. And if you're one of his fans, make sure that you subscribe. I'm sure, you know, we'll reciprocate Absolutely. Everything. And, yes. and obviously you guys listen to Warren if you listen to the show every week, twice a week, because we play it at the beginning and the end of the show. That's how we Thank end you, and that's man. How we start. And Dude,
that's the only theme song or anything like that that I've ever gotten to make. And it was so much fun, like, coming up with that.
But I will tell you, my goal at some point is to be able to pay you residuals, which I shouldn't be probably saying that on camera, because if things go the way that I want it to, if things go the way that I want it to, I'm going to end up owing you a pretty penny, because we're already at like 100, almost 200 episodes of this thing. So it wouldn't be quite that much, but it's 2.5 years worth of residual checks. I don't know. Maybe I'll be like the movie studios and send you like a 12-cent one that I have to, I spend more money on the stamp than I actually spend on paying you.
Or the envelope,
like, hey,
sure.
Actually, Warren, can you hit me back with a $5 bill? Because the mail courier wanted a tip, and it's around Christmas.
It's around Christmas, and I had to tip him. And here's your 12 cents, though, buddy.
Things are tight, okay? Things are tight. Nobody was Everybody needs to listen, so that's not the reality that I don't need to be panhandling on Broadway. That's not how my life needs to go.
Right. Yeah.
rapid fire questions, just things that. We normally do it with the athletes that we've had on the show, so yeah. I'll kind of keep it similar to that. If you were not a country music artist, what would your ideal music genre be that you would perform? And what do you think would be the weirdest musical genre to perform? So what do you think that you would want to do if you couldn't do country music? And what do you think would be the most outlandish for you to try?
So if I wasn't in country, I would just be straight up rock. I would absolutely be straight
like
up.
Like a Daughtry, Nickelback kind of?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. Straight up. Yeah, like butt rock stuff for sure.
I didn't say it. You said it.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's what they keep calling it.
I called it divorced dad rock, so.
That one feels worse to me.
It honestly might be. Who really knows at this point? I'm just telling you what I heard. The kids say the damnedest shit at school.
They do. Right? Yeah. Oh, I bet.
I can't imagine. What do you think would be the most outlandish for you to try, but you would be willing to actually give it a try?
Oh, dude. If I didn't have to sing it, like if I could just, you know, produce and like write the music and stuff for it, I'd be game to do anything. It'd be fun to, like, I've thought about legitimately like making lo-fi tracks and stuff like that just for fun. Like, I mean, but I've gotten to play around with a bunch of different genres. So I love music. I know that feels like such a bullshit, like stereotypical answer that like I listen to everything and would, but dude, there's nothing that I would just be like scared to make. You probably wouldn't want me writing anything orchestral. But other than that, I'd write it.
Why is there a mandolin in Beethoven's sixth right now?
Right. It's a really annoying little.
Yeah, it might not be the best thing. It makes sense. The rock influence is present in your music. Favorite venue that you've played?
Dude, there's so many that I love for so many different reasons. Like, like little college bars is fun. We were talking about the Grizzly Rose earlier. We got to open for Easton Corbin there.
No way.
And, yeah. And that was a special show.
Yeah.
It was a special show because the crowd actually gave us a chance. I mean, because we were just there to be practically a cover band. And then they were like, hey, do you want to open for Easton? Like, yeah. And so we did a bunch of my songs. And the crowd was just in it with us, man. And they were listening to the stories. They were digging on the songs. They got a bunch of people, talked to after that, was signing a bunch of stuff, man. That was a really special show.
Yeah, that's awesome. Was it do you know what day of the week it was? Because Sunday nights are their busy nights because that's the line dancing class.
Their line dancing night, yeah. No, it was like Friday or Saturday. It was
Friday or Saturday. Yeah. That's awesome. And it's cool that Colorado, it's weird that it's right in the center of like the downtown industrial area, but Colorado's definitely got that more country and Western history to it. And
oh, yeah.
The Grizzly Rose, people will come in from those small towns just to go to the Grizzly Rose because of like the dancing, the music, the vibe. They keep everything fairly cheap. It makes sense why that venue is something that the artists want to come back to that venue because it's a cool place to play. Everybody loves coming to Colorado, and it just seems like it's a really good setup. So it's awesome that you said that, and I'm sure that the Colorado people that are listening to the podcast appreciate that also.
Dude, I love
shout out to the Grizzly Rose.
Absolutely, I love that whole area. I love Denver, we got to go out to, I can't remember the name. Is it Georgetown or whatever?
Georgetown has the train.
The train. Yes. Yeah. Dude. So I grew up in South Carolina at the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Right. Mm-hmm. So when we were like, all right, we're going to go to Colorado to get to see some mountains. I was like, I grew up around mountains, man.
Oh,
like,
yeah. That's what they all say.
Yeah. Well, dude, my Southerners might get mad at me for saying this, but we ain't got mountains like this compared to the Rockies. Like, golly, dude, we got there and it was just like, I've never been, there's a couple times in my life that I've gotten to see places that just completely awestruck me, just like punched me in the face with how beautiful it is. And that's how I felt about going into Colorado, especially going up Georgetown through the mountains and like the train. Yeah. And dude, I felt like I was in a Clint Eastwood movie like that. It's so pretty up there.
I have been through the Smoky Mountains, and I appreciate the Smoky Mountains for what they are. The trees there, they're more like singular. Colorado is all pine trees, so everything's like filled in. You can actually kind of see into the forest through the Smoky Mountains, and I did appreciate it that way. But the Rocky Mountains, I went to school in the middle of them, so I have a heavy bias.
I was at
7,700 feet elevation the entire time I was going to school. Yeah, nice. Imagine going out there to play football. As a team from Nebraska going all the way up to 7,000 feet elevation. Yeah. We had a nice little decent home field advantage.
I bet you could run for 30 miles and not even feel it.
I would come back down here. Honestly, what you really in college, what do you get it? What does it affect you with drinking? So I couldn't drink when I would go to school, but I'd come back after drinking the way that I would at college. And when I'm just back home, which is only 2,000 feet lower elevation, all of a sudden, I'm putting down I didn't know I could drink a 12-pack to myself. This is a new skill that I did not realize I have achieved.
Unlocked.
What did you learn in college? How to kill a 12-er?
How to kill a 12-er.
I was a sociology and communications major. What do you think? I learned how to hit record on a computer screen, and I learned how to kill a 12.
Hey, at least you'll be able to keep you can kill a 12 pack by yourself for the rest of your life. Like, that's a valuable skill.
That's a skill that until it gets out of hand, and then people are going to tell me to drop it down to a six.
Right. Yeah. Cut it in half.
Six. What am I, a baby? What is this? What is this church? I can only have six.
You weren't drinking with me up there, up in the Rockies.
Yeah. I'll be the crazy mountain man. I am that way. I will only drink Coors Banquet, and I have a partiality to anybody that I see drinking Coors Light or Coors Banquet. It's mainly Coors Banquet because that's all Colorado water. They mix in some Missouri water with the Coors Light.
I didn't know that.
Sometimes. They produce it so much, and there's plants all the way. The Banquets are actually only brewed with golden water.
No way. I didn't know that. That's cool. Yep. Dude,
Next time you can play the Rose, you should go to Golden and do the Coors Brewing tour.
Denver?
It's like 30 minutes. So if you were at the Grizzly Rose, depending on where you're staying downtown, it'd be like a 30-minute drive out to the Coors Brewing Factory, but they do tours there. They give you samples of the different beers. They talk about the guy that initially started the company. And honestly, they brew a ton, like Blue Moon's brewed out of Coors Brewing Company.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's something that not a lot of people know about. They give you a little coupon at the end so you can go get all the different beers at whatever little restaurant, beer and a burger. At it's a college town, so there's a ton of different little spots. It's honestly a nice little just a little tip next time you play Bridge of the Rose.
Yeah, we'll have to go do that, man. That's badass.
All right. I guess the last rapid fire question, even though that we totally went off, this is how things normally go with me. I get off onto tangents and then I just keep talking.
I do the same thing, man. It's like every one of my shows, I just call it, it's ADD Live, bro.
There we go. Who would you most like to work with? So if you guys were gonna sit down and make, like, I don't know what the normal number of songs you would put together. Say you're gonna make a series of three songs. Who would you most? You can pick anybody that you want to. Who would you most like to collaborate on making those three songs with?
Oh, dude, that's hard. As far as like writers or producers, just anybody.
Let's go musicians, like other guys. So guys that you know can write, but guys that you think you would sound, if you're making like a series of three songs, kind of like how Keith Urban and Brad Paisley did that one, like the Star Band. Like you guys were going to put your spins on one song together, on a couple songs together. Who would you want to most do that with?
I mean, I'll have to go with the OG two that I said earlier, like, Church and Brantley, and then I'll throw Hardy in there too, man, because he's dope. And if I could go further down the rock thing, I would, like, I wouldn't be mad about it. I wouldn't be mad just writing some of the straight up rock stuff.
Yeah. I need that to happen. So everybody needs to get this in front of those people. Eric Church,
absolutely.
Brantley Gilbert, Hardy, all those guys. Honestly, I think that you'd be able to do, I'm just picturing all my favorite artists that I'm thinking, like Parker McCollum, you guys could probably make something on.
Parker's great too.
You would bring a little bit more edge to what his sound is. He's a little bit more of the sad cowboy. You'd bring a little bit more of that rock to him. No, I love him. I love his music, but yeah, it is. Right. It's total sad guy. Finally got a handle on you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are you drinking? Oh, you sad?
What are you sad?
Yeah. A little upset. All right. Things are going off the rails. So I will let you. I appreciate you coming back on, coming on the show. And
thank you for having me.
This was awesome. And like I said, I'm such a big music fan. Listening to you that first night out in Vegas, I wanted you to be, I love that you're the opener of our show. You set the tone for our episodes each week. So I appreciate you making that song, and I appreciate you giving up your time, because I know that you could be doing, you have plenty of stuff to be working on, but this has been really fun. And there's a lot of cool nuggets of your story that I think people are going to really resonate with. And we're going to be showing everybody what your newest song, Let Me Go, sounds like here in a couple seconds here once the episode's over. But I appreciate it, and I appreciate you coming on and being as open and honest about all the things that we talked about. I think our listeners are really going to enjoy it.
I appreciate you having me on, brother. I'm glad we met in Vegas. That was a lot of fun. That show was a lot of fun, and I glad I got to do the intro song. That's cool. It was a cool thing to get asked to do, and I appreciate you, brother. Thank you for having me on.
All right. If you want to check out Warren Garrett, check out warrengarrettmusic.com. Stay tuned here. We're going to listen to Let Me Go, which is out now on all platforms. This has been a special bonus edition of The Far End of the Bench with myself, Jimmy Pilato, and our special guest, Warren Garrett. Thank you very much for tuning in. We will see you guys.
You already owe me, baby. I ain't even got the keys out the door. Got me thinking maybe later. Gonna be lacing leather on the floor. This house, I'm about to get it. From the carrels to the kitchen, skip the drinks. You got me wound up and wishing you. Let me go all the way over the light. Let me go down the hall, make you fall, get you high. Let me go to the place in your head no one knows. Steal my breath, wreck this bed, pull me close and don't let me go. feel my heart beating out of my chest. The way you're looking at me, I know I ain't getting no rest. Your lips are biting mine, fingertips are leaving lines. No rush, take your time, it's just us and the shadows on the blind. Let me go all the way over the line. Let me go down the hall, make you fall, get you high. Let me go to the place in your head. No one knows, steal my breath, wreck this bed. Pull me close and don't let me go. Get you high, let me go to the place in your head. No one knows, steal my breath, wreck this bed. Pull me close and don't let me go.